This is a recording of the Ernesto Saldana teleconference with Preschool California for Tuesday, March 20th, 2012, for 5 p.m. Central Time.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Ernesto Saldana with Preschool California. I want to welcome you all to today's March 20th TK Monthly Call. We have a full slate for you ahead, so thank you very much for being able to join with your busy schedules. We will be going until 4 o'clock this afternoon. So our agenda, as you have it all before you, is we're going to start off with our quick welcome, as we always do. We'll be heading into a communications update with my colleague Deborah Kong, who is our communications director at Preschool California. Then we're going to get the new 411 and 911, what's going on in the policy update front with TK. We have two of our colleagues. We have Corey Jasperson with Senator Joe Simidian's office, and we have Adnay Mack with Association for California School Administrators. They'll both be giving us information regarding, first and foremost, what's going on with the budget around TK, and then Adnay will share information about AXA around TK. So after that conversation, we will go into a conversation and voices from the field. We're going to be visiting the community of Clovis Unified School District, where we have Lisa Peterson, who's the TK teacher there at Jefferson Elementary in Clovis Unified School District. She will be sharing information about the work that's going on in Clovis, so we can talk about practice and what's going on there regarding TK implementation in Clovis Unified. And then we will go to a Q&A for about 15, 20 minutes answering questions. I encourage everybody to email your questions to Araceli Sandoval, who's our Deputy Field Director of Preschool California. She's at, you can reach her on your agenda, you see it there, but if, in case you don't have it in front of you, she is at asandoval@preschoolcalifornia.org. And then we'll close, and then we'll talk to you guys in about a month. So we'll go ahead and get started with handing it off to Deb Kong, our Communications Director, to give the communications update. Deb?
Thanks, Ernesto. I wanted to share a few new communications tools and documents. First, we're excited to see so many districts moving ahead with implementing TK. We have a map at preschoolcalifornia.org/savekindergarten. It's a new format from an old map that we had, but it shows districts across the state that are moving ahead with implementing TK. The new format allows you to manipulate the map and click to zoom in on a particular area of the state. And the picture it provides is really very heartening, so you can see how many districts are moving ahead. Additionally, we're seeing a lot of momentum behind TK in other ways. We have a quote sheet from small school districts available on the website, again, preschoolcalifornia.org/savekindergarten. And the California Preschool Business Advisory Council recently submitted a letter to the governor and legislative leadership talking about the importance of TK. We also have some press releases highlighting support from law enforcement, advocates, state legislators, and recently an assembly subcommittee. And we have a press release about the very successful Fresno TK Summit. We've been really encouraged by the recent communications from school services and from AXA. And thank you very much to Adnay Mack, who you'll be hearing from shortly, saying that districts that choose to offer TK can get full ADA. And you can find these on the website under resources at the bottom. You'll also find continuing media coverage of TK. And coming soon, we will be introducing a site that highlights parents' stories, those whose children have benefited from TK and those who are worried that their children may not have access to it if the current budget proposal goes through. Our website is being constantly updated, so please keep visiting it and send us suggestions for what you'd like to see featured there. Thanks, Ernesto.
Thanks, Deb. Deb will be on for the duration of the call, so if folks have questions regarding communications, we can definitely have Deb field those. So now we're going on to the policy update part of the conversation, and as you all know, there's some really exciting conversations that we had at the last assembly budget hearing last week. So we have Corey Jasperson, who's the principal consultant with Senator Joe Simidian's office. Corey, I'm just going to read your bio briefly. Corey returned to Senator Simidian's staff in 2010 as a consultant to the Select Committee on Privacy. During his five-year hiatus from Senator Simidian's staff, Corey served as Chief of Staff to the Assembly Speaker Pro Temp. Corey's key policy focus has been on education, budget, revenue, and taxation, and privacy. He has staffed well-known legislation to increase California's minimum wage, make human trafficking a felony, limit the use of gay panic strategies by criminal defendants, equalize revenue limit funding for school districts, change the kindergarten age, and establish San Francisco Bay Restoration Authority. Before coming to the Capitol, Corey worked at the Santa Clara Board of Supervisors, Office of the Dean of Graduate and Policy Research at Stanford University, and the Federal Bureau of Investigation as a Hmong linguistic consultant, and with the Greenlining Institute, a statewide multi-ethnic public policy and advocacy center in Berkeley. Corey graduated with a BA in International Relations and a minor in Linguistics from UC Davis. He is fluent in Hmong. And without further ado, I'll have Corey introduce Corey, who sent us a great article about why bilingual folks are smarter. So, Corey, go ahead and take it away in the policy update.
Wow, thanks for the fabulous intro.
Oh, no, thank you.
And I got my start in education stuff down in Fresno at Easterby Elementary School.
There we go. We got a lot of Central Valley folks on the call.
And Pete, that's right. So, well, happy to be here, and happy I was able to had a change in my schedule that allowed me to be on the call and participate. And I really look forward to any questions that I'm sure all of you may have, and that's very, very useful to our office. It's very useful to the senator to hear as much as we can from the field about questions, concerns about the TK program. So just in brief, to kind of sum up where we are, I think as most of you know, the governor's proposal is no longer to eliminate TK, but rather allow local school districts to decide at a local level whether or not to enroll fall birthdays and whether or not to serve those children with fall birthdays in a two-year kindergarten program. This is an obvious departure from Senate Bill 1381, which changed the kindergarten entry date, because under current law, all children would be required to be served, just like kids in regular kindergarten or, you know, any other grade level. So districts that, under the governor's proposal, districts that chose to go forward with the new cutoff date and not serve children with fall birthdays, that would save the state money, because the state would no longer be sending revenue limit funding to local school districts. Local school districts, on the other hand, would have to cut your budgets, because you would no longer be receiving revenue limit funding from the state. And this is a pretty important issue. The administration continues to describe this in such a way that would lead local school districts to think that there would be extra money available to use on other stuff if you chose not to serve kids in transitional kindergarten, and that, in fact, is not the case. The savings in the governor's budget proposal from eliminating the November birthdays is used as the balancer in the deferral payback. So there is no extra money in the system, that this would be a direct cut to local districts. Those districts, on the other hand, that under the governor's proposal chose to go forward and implement transitional kindergarten programs, the administration has stated repeatedly now in the last couple of weeks that they would in fact provide full funding for all of those children. It would, however, require an early admission waiver to admit the child into kindergarten, and it would also require a continuance form to serve the child for an additional year in kindergarten. And so,
Corey, can I ask you a quick question?
Sure.
Is there a sample early admittance waiver that's out there, or do you know what the key elements would be that a district would have to put in there to make
right.
sure there?
I'm not aware of a sample. I think that CSBA has a sample early admission policy that they just sent out a while ago.
Got it. Okay, we'll check that out. Perfect. Thanks, Corey.
Right. So the conditions on the early admission waiver are essentially that the parent or guardian is okay with it, and that the school district, on a case-by-case basis, determines it's in the best interest of the child. And the parents also have to be provided with pros and cons about, early admission versus waiting for an additional year. But that's permissive authority. It's been, on the books in California for many, many years. We heard from a lot of local districts back in 2010 when we were working on the original legislation that called us up and gave us an earful about the early admission language, and they were like, there's this whole new process, and we're going to have to do all this case-by-case evaluation. Why are you thrusting this upon us? And we pointed out, that was existing law. It was contained in Senate Bill 1381 because that was a code section that we were amending. But we didn't change the early admission policy. We, in fact, we took great care to make sure that we didn't change the early admission policy because the senator believed it was some important flexibility for those children whose parents, you know, really didn't want to take advantage of a TK year, that they would be able to essentially opt out of TK and just have a regular, you know, one-year kindergarten experience. However, our understanding from the local districts that we've talked to is that requests for early admission in the past have been very rare, and we would attribute that to the fact that California's cutoff date is so late in the year. We've been encouraging local districts really for the last couple of years now that if you don't have an early admission policy, you should probably get one, because we would expect, given the policy change to the cutoff date for school being moved up earlier in the year, that you're going to get a lot of requests from parents for early admission. And even those districts that have early admissions policies now, you might want to revisit that policy in light of the date change, because again, we would expect requests for early admission would spike upwards and then probably taper off over time as parents became more accustomed to September 1 is the cutoff date. It's not December 2nd anymore. And so, you know,
Corey, can I ask a quick question?
Yes.
So on that, in the early admission waiver piece, that kicks in only if the governor's proposal, which we don't anticipate being successful, happens, right?
That's right. But okay. I wanted to be clear on, you know, what the current proposal is. So right, under the governor's proposal.
I'll speak for myself, Free School California.
Right, and I will, you know, clarify that here in a second. We think it's unlikely that would happen. However, under the governor's proposal, districts would make that choice locally. In order to serve children with fall birthdays, then the children would need an early admission waiver, right? Because otherwise they wouldn't be eligible for school because the cutoff date changes. The governor keeps the cutoff date the way it is, moving up a month at a time over the next 3 years.
Yes.
So those children would need the early admission waiver. And then if a district wanted to continue with a two-year kindergarten program, those children would need an additional continuance form as well to allow them to be in kindergarten for 2 years. A couple of other quick things on the governor's proposal that we think is important for local districts to understand is, under the governor's proposal, there would no longer be a statewide cutoff date for school. That school cutoff dates would vary from district to district up and down the state. In fact, because of the case-by-case nature of the early admission process, cutoff dates would vary even within school districts, because some parents wouldn't be able to make it through this additional requirement that they would have to seek an early admission waiver for the child to participate in school. And so that would, you know, we think would be fairly interesting to, you know, no longer have a statewide cutoff date for school. How would you handle, you know, if your neighboring school district had a different cutoff date than your school district did? Would you have students seeking to leave your district to take advantage of a two-year program in another district? Or would you possibly have students, you know, coming to your district to take advantage of your own two-year program? That could get pretty complicated. We also think having statewide cutoff dates that would essentially vary from district to district, and also having, you know, some districts would do two-year programs, some districts would presumably choose not to do a two-year program. We think that raises a lot of constitutional issues, that you would have identically situated children, in fact, children with the same birth date, that would have vastly different options available to them. The other thing under the governor's proposal that we've been a little perplexed by is, in order to ensure that local school districts that chose to implement a TK program using an early admission waiver as well as a continuance form, that the administration's trailer bill language seeks to make it clear that districts would receive full funding at the beginning of the school year. And the part that's puzzling about that is the language in the governor's trailer bill not only allows districts to receive full funding for fall birthday children, the language also would allow school districts to receive full funding for any child born at any time during during the school year. And so in addition to providing a two-year program or even just a regular one-year kindergarten program to the September, October, November kids, the governor's trailer bill language would allow districts to receive full funding at the beginning of the school year for December, January, February, March, April, May, June kids as well, which we think is kind of puzzling. That would increase cost to the state. Conservative estimate, $1.7 billion just on the revenue limit funding. So those are a couple of things that are kind of out there on the governor's proposal. To wrap up, we think it's very important to point out that the governor's proposal is just a proposal. Second thing we would point out, transitional kindergarten is the law, passed by the legislature in 2010, signed by the governor. The third thing we would point out is, contrary to some of the information that's been out there the last couple of months, transitional kindergarten is fully funded. And the funding is in a continuous appropriation, which is a statutory appropriation. It's not subject to the Budget Act, which also means that the funding for TK, just like the funding for third grade or fifth grade or 10th grade, is not subject to a line item veto by the governor. And then the last couple of points we think are important is, even under the governor's proposal, districts would receive full funding if they chose to serve fall children. And then the final thing is, last Tuesday, the Assembly Budget Subcommittee on Education Finance, that's Assembly Budget Sub number 2, they voted to reject the governor's TK proposal. And so that proposal is no longer in the version of the budget that's in the Assembly. The Senate Budget Subcommittee will be hearing the TK item on April 12th. And that's where we're at.
Perfect. So what I got, Corey, is TK is the law. TK is fully funded under the law. And even under the governor's proposal, if it is successful, the districts still get funding. And that is on last week's Assembly's subcommittee budget hearing, the Assembly rejected the governor's proposal regarding TK.
Correct. So worst case scenario, you would be able to choose whether or not you wanted to serve the fall birthday kids. But if you chose to do so, you would be fully funded.
Got it. Perfect. So, excellent. Thank you, Corey, for being able to stay on the line.
You bet. Happy to be here.
And folks, please be sure to, any questions you have for Corey, go ahead and email them to Araceli Sandoval, asandoval@preschoolcalifornia.org. We'll make sure to address those questions, as many as we can, in the last 15 minutes of our call. So the second half of our policy update conversation, we have the privilege of having my friend and colleague, Adnay Mack, who's a legislative advocate for the Association of California School Administrators, also known as ACSA. Adnay, I'm going to be reading your bio real quick.
Okay.
Adnay advocates on behalf of members of ACSA in the areas of the state budget, special education, transportation, pupil services, preschool, and other areas. Prior to joining ACSA, Mr. Mack was a legislative advocate for the California School Boards Association, where he focused on the issues of charter schools, facilities, retirement, and professional development. He has also worked as an advocate for the Superintendent of Public Instruction, Jack O'Connell, and Governor Gray Davis in his office of the Secretary of Education for Education. So, Adnay, take it away.
All right. Hey, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks. I want to first start off and say I agree with everything Corey said. It's just a proposal, so don't overreact. And I have to tell you, I actually say that often to a lot of my ACSA members, because I will tell you that outside of weighted student formula, transitional kindergarten is probably the number one question I get every day.
Wow.
There is... You know, the governor's proposal, and even as much information that I provide or that Corey provides or Preschool California provides, people are still worried or confused or unclear about what this means and what the intention is and what the future looks like. And so as with any governor's proposal, you often have to understand that it's only a proposal initially, and that it always is bound to change, especially around May and after April and into June and hopefully not July. Things can change, and we should acknowledge that. That is something that could happen and be prepared for that. Now, as it relates to my members, it's really all over the board right now about what people are choosing to do. I will tell you that there's some folks that are confused about whether it's going to get funded. There's some folks that even just as recently as about 3 weeks ago, I had some folks who thought that the start dates were moving back to December 2nd. Everyone's worried about whether the mandate was actually eliminated, whether they will be funded. And so those are all of the questions I get. And then you add into other aspects of just educating the kids. I often get curriculum issues or questions and concerns. I also get how do you treat them regarding inter-district transfers, transportation issues, everything that you can possibly think of how to serve kindergarten. I also get that for transitional kindergartens. And so my response is often, listen, you're going to treat them the same way you would a kindergartner. And I think that's kind of the first place to start is you're not going to treat any child that you would put into a transitional kindergarten program or a preppy K or junior K or kindergarten one any different than you would treat a kindergartner except for the type of curriculum that you provide them. And I think that's an important note to understand. So anything about inter-district transfers or how you treat kids with special needs or the size of the classroom, those are all things that are going to be exactly the same for a kindergartner as it is for any child in a transitional kindergarten program. And that's what I tried to express in the alert that I sent is I think that a lot of folks have forgotten what current law is, and the governor's proposal doesn't change current law right now. It's a proposal, and so we have to wait for that to get voted on. People have forgotten about what kindergarten current law looks like. Early admission, funding until the kids turn five. You know, a lot of people are forgetting that, yes, under current law, you can still, there's four-year-olds that might still be in kindergarten because the start date doesn't finish being pushed back for another 3 years. And all of that's information that a lot of folks need to understand and comprehend as we move forward. And I still get questions every day about this. Now, as for implementing kind of these programs, again, it will be hit or miss depending on the district. I know that there's some districts that have just said, listen, it's too confusing for any variety of reasons, or they're not sure about staffing the classroom. They may think they have to have layoffs. Whatever the case may be, I think some districts are just choosing not to implement it. And that is, you know, right now, I've always argued that, yes, that's your prerogative, but, you know, I approach it in a way that it's important to serve these kids. And the sooner you put them in a good program, the better it is for them and the better success that they will have later on. And that has been my approach to advising districts. Now, on the positive side of that, I have a lot of members that are calling me about doing really innovative activities, having innovative programs, and excited to engage these young five-year-olds or four-year-olds in a program to ensure that they're successful academically. And it ranges from all over the state. As Araceli and I talked last week about some of this stuff, listen, ALPAW is doing some very wild and different things. And a lot of that is the leadership in the district. The superintendent's the former early childhood educator, and he believes in it and has value in it. I have another superintendent that, even though they may ask a lot of questions, their intent is to have a program that's operating on the beginning of the school year for 12-13. And they're a basic aid district, so the more kids they serve, it really has to do with their local resource. It has nothing to do with the state. And for them, it's irrelevant what the state's going to do with regarding the governor's proposal, because they want to move forward and provide a program for the kids. And that's the same with some other districts kind of throughout the state, especially some of our smaller school districts. Even though they may have a program that may only serve 4 or 3 students, they look at it as an opportunity to get these kids in early, provide them a quality program, and kind of help set the stage for the kids to move forward through their system. And right now, quite frankly, the governor's, you know, the way he's written the language, I have some kids, some districts that are super excited because they feel like they can serve every 4-year-old in their community as long as they turn 5 before the end of the last day of school. And for them, that's additional resources. And they look forward to it. They actually want me to get that language signed as quick as possible because they look at it as an opportunity to get more kids into their district, and for them, that's more ADA. And that's kind of the approach that we're having right now. I think that, you know, from ACCESS perspective, we've always been supportive of Corey and Senator Smidian from day one. I think that the majority of my membership is the sooner that they can get the kids into their classrooms and expose them to the curriculum, they think that's the best way to approach it. And if they can get more of the, you know, if they can get these 4-year-olds into the 2-year program, especially, like we always say, especially the boys who are mostly immature, and I'm suffering from that now with my own kindergartner, they're really excited about that. And even though you'll hear some rumbling from some districts, I think the majority of the folks are really excited about having these kids in early and implementing a program. I will say, listen, I'm not going to lie to you and say that we don't have some outliers. I think that there's a lot of districts that are worried about cost. They don't fully understand that, you know, if you move the start date up, you lose students, and so you're losing ADA. I think that some of them are kind of balancing. They're doing some calculation that may say that they can't break even with serving these kids. And quite frankly, I don't really understand that quite yet. And again, it's their own value system. If they feel that they don't want to serve these kids at this early an age, that's something that they're deciding to do. And the governor, under his proposal, is trying to provide that type of flexibility.
But Adnan, for clarification, that's under the proposal. But under current law, they are required to implement TK for those November kids, right?
That is correct. They are required to provide TK for those kids under current law. And I think that what some districts are saying is that it's so confusing that if they don't serve them, then either they may get an audit finding or no one's going to catch them until they implement a program the following year. And not that I, you know, I kind of argue with them to say I probably wouldn't do it that way because it's likely that regardless of what happens between the governor's proposal and the budget, you're guaranteed to have some resources for you to serve these kids. I don't think the state's going to get out of trying to provide the resources if you choose to do the program. I think that you will be funded regardless. And so that's where we are, and that's kind of where my members are right now.
Got it. Excellent.
I hope is that okay? Was that clear?
Yes. And then if we have questions, there's some folks that have questions. We'll go through some of the questions during the last 15-10 minutes of our discussion. But thank you, Adnan. Anything else you wanted to share before we go into our voices from the field?
No, I think that's about it. I think that's kind of where we are right now. You know, let me add to this is. Now, since I'm an advocate and I've been doing budget policy for a long time, or at least for the last couple of years, I don't put a lot of credence in what the subcommittees do, only because that's I often look at some of the subcommittee work as it gives you an idea of where the legislature is, but sometimes the caucus does something so different from what the subcommittees do that you often may get caught off guard. And so I think the subcommittee work in the budget is important, and it gives some signals as to where you think the legislature will be. But at the same time, I don't want folks to get so excited about some of those work that the subcommittee does, thinking that their advocacy is now over. It's not over until the budget gets signed.
Got it.
And you need to stay kind of strong in your advocacy, because sometimes the things can change dramatically from what the subcommittees do to what the budget actually looks like, especially with conference committees. And so you do have to stay aware and vigilant through all of that.
No, that's great. That's great information, Adin. Definitely, we obviously feel the importance of still remaining in that advocacy fight at full throttle. Thank you. So, in the policy discussion, we're going to transition to the field, and we're heading into the Central Valley. We have Clovis Unified School District. Lisa Peterson is a TK teacher there at Jefferson Elementary. Lisa will be sharing her experiences of Clovis Unified with the development of their TK program. As an early adopter, she will review the district's implementation process, their student enrollment, family outreach. You know, a lot of the information of how do you prepare and get your pieces ready to start building your system for TK. You know, the classroom, also the classroom environment they designed, and their lessons learned. Lisa's background is Lisa has capably pioneered a pilot program there at Jefferson Elementary. She has an extensive background, which includes 17 years of classroom experience in the primary grades, including first and second grades, as well as both half-day and extended kindergarten. Her accomplishments also include running a TK-K combo pilot. That's really key because a lot of districts are looking to find out, you know, how do we do a TK-K in a quality way? That's really critical. And she was also recently recognized as Teacher of the Year in the Clovis Unified School District. So we're honored to have Lisa Peterson to share the Clovis Unified School District model. Lisa.
Thank you. Well, last year I was at the place that most of you are right now, and that was confused, and what are we going to do? And our district started a task force to look into early implementation for TK. And I got involved because we're a Title I school, and last year we had about 24 fall birthdays. So we felt that we were a good school to pilot the early implementation of TK. So with that decision made late last spring, I spent a lot of time researching over the summer about what is TK and what do we need to do, and all of the questions that so many people have. So we started, just interject if you have a question or if I'm going on the wrong direction. I'm a teacher, not...
No problem, Lisa. No, definitely. Okay. We'll do.
Okay. So we, at Jefferson, we have 18 TK students and 9 K students in my class, so I have a TK combo. And there's one other classroom in Clovis Unified that has also a TK combo, 15 TKs, and I think she has 10 or 12 kindergarten students, 4 in their combination class. So right now, as of today, Clovis is registering TK students at every school site. And I think they're waiting to see what their numbers are going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And we are hoping that the way Clovis is divided into areas, we have 8 feeder schools that go into the junior high, and then that goes into 1 high school. We're hoping that the area that I'm in, the Clovis High area, that all of the students would come to my classroom, and I would be able to have a full TK classroom.
Got it.
Don't know yet until the numbers get to that point. So right now I'm preparing for a full TK classroom next year. What point did you want? You wanted me to go more over what the district is doing right now?
You know, your general information of, you know, you were sharing, I think where you're going right now with the TKK combo is good. Like, what made you lean in that direction? What were some of the key components you did to construct that TKK combo? How would that be different from just a straight TK classroom? What are the factors that you wanted to make sure that you were providing differentiated instruction in that TKK combo classroom and that you weren't just doing a water day K curriculum, you were doing a real true TK/K differentiated instruction piece?
Well, I really didn't know at the beginning of the year what it is that the TK students needed. I had a little bit of an idea, but I'm not an early childhood education major, so I used my preschool teachers as a great resource. You know, how do you start them out, and what kinds of things will they need? And so they would talk to me about, well, if they're not having any preschool experience, you're going to need to teach them how to cut with scissors. And so it was that basic. You know, I had to go through and find out what the process is with cutting lines on paper. And then, you know, it was from that all the way up to, you know, don't expect them to be able to write like I would my kindergartners when they would come in. So I took a lot of time in finding out what level the kids would be when they would come in. But in the summer, I didn't know what I was going to get in the fall. I didn't know I was going to have 18. But I will say that having a large number of TK students in a combo class is much better than a program that can have two or four. I don't know how you could do it with a smaller group, but I make sure that I'm using the developmentally appropriate practices where I'm not rushing them, and it's more child-centered and child-driven, and I'm guiding them, and they're, you know, when they're ready to move on to the next stage, then I'm there to support them and help them to move on to the next stage and developmenting or developmentally growing and are hands-on manipulatives for these kids. It's a whole different mindset than the kindergarten class. So I kind of have my two groups a little bit separated when I try and do some stations. The TK kids are free flower. They move in and out of teacher-guided stations. And the kindergarten students are more a little bit more regimented as what they're supposed to do, not quite as much social and emotional development. So, and I'm also looking at different materials for them. The Math Their Way program is all hands-on, and that's been excellent for them. And the Handwriting Without Tears, using that, has been great for the transitional kindergarten kids. And there's a lot of resources out there. And Fresno County, Wilma at Fresno County has been awesome, and Elizabeth has been awesome, too, in providing all kinds of resources. The California Kindergarten Association, Preschool California, their websites. There just is so much information there now to guide you than there was when we started about a year ago.
So. Lisa, thanks for sharing that. So what would you say are the top three things you needed to do? So I'm hearing you connected, and I've heard this from other places, as you started the pre-designing of the TKK classroom combo, you seem to really appreciate you had more TK kids than a small number, right? You had 18 kids versus 18 TK kids and 9 K kids. So I thought that was an important piece. You said you kind of connecting back with your the developmentally appropriate kind of instructional piece, you connecting with your preschool teacher colleague was really key for you and kind of getting into that, what do kids need to know? And you gave examples of knowing how to cut or knowing how to maybe hold a pencil or prepare for early writing, right? So an early letter recognition. So I'm assuming those pieces were there. What other, say, two or three pieces would you say was really key as someone who's going in that classroom, things they should be aware of or teachers should, you know, keep an eye on as they start building out, say, their TKK combo classrooms?
What was something that I learned this year that become very important, and that is observing the students and their ability to process language and, you know, their speaking, and are they speaking in complete sentences? Are they able to get across what information they want to share with you? Problem solving. You know, in the beginning of the school year, it was arguing and pulling away and fighting, and I thought, oh my goodness, what have I done? What have I gotten myself into? Then, as I educated myself about the social development that these younger children need, I just took a deep breath, and I just really started intervening and helping them to find the words to solve their problems and, or, you know, to develop. And the DRDP that the preschool uses was a foundational tool that I used in how to assess them and what to look for as far as their development goes and the social issue. So that was something that was very important, to have that mindset, that you're really going to be helping them to grow as a person and not just know their numbers and their letters and their sounds. That was a really big piece, and more so than you would normally in a kindergarten class.
Got it. And so you're kind of the philosophy of your helping the development of the whole child.
Right, developing the whole child, exactly.
So, Lisa, one thing that's screaming at me is, you know, because we don't get a lot of TKK combo conversations on our line, so thank you so much for sharing this information. One piece of question that we're getting, I just thought would really, the question I have as well is, how did you go about choosing, in the TKK combo classroom, how did you go about choosing those K kids? Was there anything in particular that you were looking at for those K kids in that TKK combo, or is it just these kids? It was just putting the numbers in there.
Well, we really tried to fill up my class with TK kids and just hold it just TK kids as long as we could. So the kindergarten kids that came in, they really came in towards like the last week before school started. So I really didn't have too much of an input as far as some of the kindergarten kids of those nine. You know, there were a few, though, I will share with you, that came from our preschool on our site, and it was discussed that these children are really immature and need more social development time, and so, or perhaps they were academically challenged and really low, so they thought that would be a good placement. The preschool teachers thought that this transitional kindergarten would be a good placement for them. So some of those kindergarten students are with me this year, and they will actually do a second year. They're not going to be ready for first grade next year. Those teachers were right. And then the other maybe four or five kindergarten students, those students just came to me. They were just like last registered, and so that's how they got my class.
Got it. Perfect. And, hey, Lisa, this is Corey from Center Semenian's office. I think that's a really great point that you just made. TK isn't just for the TK kids. School districts can serve older kids in TK as well with a continuance form. I think that's because you said that, like, eight or nine of the kids were assessed and looked like they really weren't quite ready for regular kindergarten work, and so they're actually going to be in the TK class for the two-year period.
Right. I've put, you know, those students that came in that their summer birthdays, which is interesting, but they're more streamlined with the TK kids than they are the kindergarten part of the class. So it's worked out really well for them.
Right. No, I thought that was perfect, because there's a lot of misunderstanding out there in the field that the TK program, the two-year program, is only for September, October, November kids. When, in fact, we put a lot of flexibility into the statute on purpose so that school districts can serve children born prior to September 1st in a two-year program. You would just need the continuance form for those kids. So that was good.
That's good. Excellent. So excellent segue. We'll go ahead and take Q&A from the audience, from folks who are listening. So, folks, once again, please email your questions to Araceli Sandoval, @asandoval@preschoolcalifornia.org. We have about 10 minutes, so we'll still be able to field those questions. Real quick, I just want to make a quick 411. We know that as districts are moving forward and the advocacy efforts continue to pound away in Sacramento about the importance of having TK available for these fall children, it's still there. So we anticipate we will be successful. We'll continue to pursuing this road. What we want to make sure is districts are kind of coming off the maybe not sure they have to implement to I better be ready to start developing my system for TK. So folks are kind of coming into that light as as hopefully this advocacy ever continues to be successful. So we want to be able to have webinars that provide kind of TK the easy way. If districts are in a rapid place, which is not our ideal, we would obviously urge districts to move soon to really try to build your system out on this because we know how complicated and layered it is to do it in a good way. But we're going to be developing webinars that will be taking place in mid-April, one every week, that will help illustrate four specific areas of developing your TK system in an expedited way, but also trying to encourage quality in that process as well. So we'll make sure that email goes out to this whole listserv so you have information. If you're more, along the way in the process, excellent. If you want to be on these calls, fantastic. You'll get the information. But for folks in districts who are kind of looking to build that out, that will be available. Those webinars will be available in mid-April, starting mid-April, and it will be on every week after that for about 4 weeks. So we'll take some questions that we have here. So so I have a question for our policy colleagues. So for Corey and Adne, so there was a concept of choice and about doing this or moving it forward. How would you, Corey, in the sense of TK implementation, a choice, when you have that question of a choice and governor's proposal and the law, how do you answer that?
Well, I think our response would be there are lots of bad things that happen when you start displacing children from public school. It's bad for the kids. It's bad for families because they would have to come up with additional child care preschool funds that they may not have. It's bad for schools because schools lose the money because you would lose your ADA. And it's also bad for Prop 98 because attendance in TK, like attendance in every other grade level, is a multiplier in the Prop 98 formula. So to the extent that children are displaced from the K-12 education system, keep in mind these TK kids are in all of your classrooms today. These aren't new kids. Changing the cutoff date didn't create new kids. You have these kids in every single one of your classrooms. Removing those children from the K-12 system would take over $9 billion of funding out of K-12 education over the next decade and a half, and it would permanently lower the Prop 98 guarantee. So even in the future, when your enrollment returned to normal, you would forever have a lower per-pupil funding rate in your local districts. So we don't see any difference between displacing kids at a statewide level and allowing children to be displaced at a local level. The only difference is the numbers would be smaller. So would it be okay to displace a few hundred kids, a few thousand, 10,000, 25,000? All the negative things still happen.
Got it.
And the other thing we're kind of curious about, this whole issue of choice, we don't believe that a local school district would, of your own volition, choose to lower your attendance. You would be essentially cutting your own budget because many of the fixed costs and the sunken costs remain even if those children aren't in your classrooms. And so, we find that very, very puzzling that the administration continues to think that if local school districts are allowed to choose whether or not to serve kids, that local districts would decide to essentially, cut your own budget and not serve the kids. Because these kids are in your classroom today.
And Corey, under the law, there's not a choice, right?
That's right. It's just like regular kindergarten. Transitional kindergarten is optional for children to attend, but mandatory for districts to serve every child who desires to attend, just like regular kindergarten. And, those parents who don't want to take advantage of the TK two-year program, they could request an early admission waiver and go directly into regular K. or not, or they could, you know, stay in preschool or some other arrangement, go to private school. You know, it's not mandatory, but it's mandatory that districts serve all the kids that show up. So we think that, I mean, we built in a lot of flexibility in the statute already to allow, you know, maximum flexibility at the local level. But we weren't interested, and that was the compromise that the legislature made back in 2010. Changing the cutoff date was predicated on not displacing children from school, because lots of bad things happen when you start excluding or displacing children from the K-12 school system.
Got it. Thank you, Corey. Question: we're getting a question, Adney and Corey, about charter schools. What? How are they? How does the SB 1381 relate to them in implementation regarding charter schools implementing TK?
You want to try that one, Adney?
Yeah, I was about to say it's no different, honestly.
Got it. Requirements that would be for charter schools for K, they would sit under them for TK?
I agree that it does. It's a requirement. It's a mandate that you provide it. You know, charter schools are going to be kind of unique in that the, you know, a district has the decision as to where to place their transitional kindergarten program. Charter schools don't have that ability. So if they provide a K-8 education, a K-6 education, they're going to be required to provide a TK program.
Got it. Thank you, Adney.
No, there should be no difference. In fact, when you look at the education code under the Charter Schools Act, it says, you know, charter schools are basically exempt from the education code. However, there are four exceptions that charter schools are not exempt from. One of them is the age requirements for school attendance.
Exactly.
There we go.
So,
thank you.
Yeah, we think that's clear.
Yeah.
Excellent. So we have a question for Lisa Peterson.
Yes.
So you'll have our last set of questions here as we're rounding off our getting close to our 4 o'clock hour. So folks are asking, so quick set of questions. One is what professional development is really needed for a teacher to be able to launch in August? What professional development would you recommend? If you could talk to district administrators and say, hey, this type of professional development would be really great to prepare your TK teachers, what would you recommend?
Week in Hawaii.
Oh.
Let's see. The things that I've taken on this year that I would want to share would be the DRDP, finding out more about that, the school readiness, which right now it's just in the pilot, just being piloted, but that will be good when that comes out. I don't know when it is coming out, but the Math Their Way program has a conference you can go to. The Math Their Way would be great for TK teachers. It's different. If your kindergarten teachers don't use it, it's just something different for you to use, and it's so foundational.
Is it more developmentally appropriate way to teach math?
Yes.
Got it. Perfect.
And also, I went to the California Kindergarten Association conference in January, and I wasn't expecting to find such a treasure in this Dr. Jean. Dr. Jean, I don't know if anyone's familiar with her, but she has her own website, drjean.org, and she has a huge collection of music and movement and songs, and she has activities to go with these songs, and there's just, you know, you're crossing over, it's all developmentally appropriate for young children. And that has really filled my TK classroom with lots of activity and colorful, you know, movement, and I just have loved that. So those are the three things that I have done this year that have really improved my transitional K classroom.
Excellent. Thank you so much. So I'm hearing some of those kind of the information regarding DRD PSR, that kind of piece, the Math Their Way. You said there was a conference, and they really seemed to really connect math and development in the appropriate way. And then you said drjean.org had some great set of songs and how to really connect in kind of that early elementary, early learning environment.
Yes, all those.
Excellent. So we hit the 401 mark, so I apologize for holding folks over 1 minute. I want to thank our speakers today. Greatly appreciate my colleague Deb Kong on the call, Corey Jasperson from Senator Simidian's office, Adnay Mack from AXA, and Lisa Peterson, a TK teacher from Jefferson Elementary and Clovis Unified School District. Thank you so much for joining on today's call and providing the great information you provided from policy advocacy to practice. Such a critical piece to get both those as people are rapidly working to build transitional kindergarten in their respective communities to serve those children. So I want to thank all of you for being on the call. A real quick shout-out to my colleagues here at Preschool California, Araceli Sandoval. That's Araceli snapping her fingers in the background. Meredith Gonzalez. For both of them working to really move, get this call ready and for us to do it this month. And my colleagues over at the Fresno County Office of Ed and the Santa Clara County Office of Ed, Wilma Hashimoto and Lisa Kaufman, for their great insight, expertise, and really helping us develop a sequenced agenda. So once again, our next call will be April 17th at 3 p.m. Please be sure to be on that call. And also be on the lookout for webinars probably right after that. Well, we'll be doing weekly webinars on TK, the easy way, but a high-quality easy way. So I want to make sure you guys all get that. That information will be coming out in the next couple of weeks. We'll be planning it with our colleagues and partners to get our firmer understanding of what specific four webinars. If we're going to hit four of them, what should they be on? And if you want to send out some suggestions on, you know, if you're going to do four webinars, please have them be on, you know, instructional strategies and curriculum or professional development or assessment and evaluation. Please send it to Araceli. We would love your feedback and input as we chart out what these four webinars will be. So thank you so much, and you have a great week.